Pips and Scowls West.
West, West, West.
This is our 2019 Year in Review Favorites of the Year.
Yay.
That was a very
difficult one. Yeah, I was like, we're all rolling into it this morning.
How's that anvil dropping?
Right. Once again, I'm going to highlight the fact that this is our favorite, not necessarily what we say is the best of the year, because we do have a critical eye, but these are things that we want to celebrate, things that we enjoyed.
These are things we would like you to look at.
Yeah, exactly.
Take a look, and then you can tell me if you disagree.
Because Lloyd knows pretty much all of these things I was shoving in all of my friends' faces. The whole year. Look at this!
Seriously.
Do it!
We ideally have three things to highlight in each category. We have six mulligans that will be through the, or excuse me, six honorable mentions that we will be utilizing between the two episodes. Yeah, it's kind of like a mulligan.
Magic!
But we will be doing four categories this episode and four categories next episode. But, should go ahead and get to it. So without further ado, our favorite comic publishers of 2019... I am going to lead us off with Marvel at number three. Really, for me, this was all about House of X and Powers of Ten, Silver Surfer Black, and Absolute Carnage. I really would say that I think Marvel was way down the list of best publishers. Marvel is, like, number eight, and then my number two is my number two. Like, I felt like a lot of the publishers this year didn't stand out, had one or two standout books, but... Marvel had enough with what they did successfully with House of X and Powers of Ten. I think speaks pretty high volumes. Yeah. Patrick,
coincidentally enough, at my number three position is Marvel as well.
Okay,
yeah. Similarly for House of X, Powers of Ten, that's literally the only event I've ever, like, cared for in comics history, so
yeah,
good for that. And I think also just generally I do read a good number of Marvel books, and I think they, like, have all their aces in their places over there. They have some good creators, and they really know how to utilize them properly, I feel. Like, nothing, like, phenomenal or mind-blowing or anything, but, you know, it's just a good, solid book. Why not?
As I destroy the entire room. I put Boom because I refused to put Marvel.
actually, Boom was, yeah, I almost put that there too.
The problem that I had with Marvel is, like, they, like, House and Powers, like, I definitely have some Marvel titles within later in other regions, but the problem that I had is after House and Powers, they had all the X-Men line, and they, like, dropped the ball on that. What was the, I can't think of the damn event name, but the ending of Jason Aaron's run for Thor.
Oh, well, War of the Realms.
War of the Realms was one of the biggest disappointments that I had, like, this entire year.
Well, what made you choose Boom, then, in the third spot?
Because I had to look at it in the realm of the fact that I was like, okay, so you've got all these other ones, and who do you look at when I was... It basically ended up with Boom, because they might not have made any of my favorite titles, necessarily, but they held pretty firm in what I enjoyed reading this year. Like, I don't remember if we had, because, like, they moved on from Shattered Grid.
Mm-hmm. They went to Beyond the Grid.
And they went to Beyond Grid, and now they're doing Necessary Evil.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, when you get storylines from them with things, you get storylines from them. Like, these are, I miss Marguerite Bennett a lot, but it's fine. I'm okay.
That's true.
So, it was the storylines that I liked, the things that I read from them that I enjoyed, I thoroughly enjoyed, and then Marvel, I would thoroughly enjoy it, get excited for what they're going to give me, and then God's head.
Fair enough.
Right.
Fair enough. So at number two, I have Image Comics.
Woo.
All right. This was, for me, three big titles amongst everything else that they did this year. Murder Falcon, Middle West, and Little Bird. And I feel like that's a mic drop moment. There's not a lot that has to be said beyond that.
And the Excellence, too.
Oh, yeah, and Excellence. Like, they continue to let creators do creative things, and having a universe that is not interconnected really, really works for Image Comics, where it's, your flavors are really your choice, you know. If you want mint chocolate chip ice cream one day and then some strawberry the next day, Image Comics will give you that. So,
the first thing.
Yeah. Patrick?
Yeah, I was sad Image didn't make it onto my list. Whoa. But I know. But number two, I have DC. Yay.
Up.
Yeah. Ooh,
okay, well, we'll pass it on to Kat then.
My number two is also Image. It was the same concept with them. They held pretty firm, and I didn't necessarily read a ton of Image titles or keep with them, but the stuff they put out was completely solid. It just maybe wasn't in my my court, per se.
Yeah.
So, like, Murder Falcon was amazing and great. It wasn't in my court, but it was a solid piece. Yeah. And it's the same thing with Middle West. Yeah. It wasn't in my court, necessarily, but it was a solid piece.
Yeah.
So.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, well.
I mean, I guess we all know what our number one is. So I kind of want to know what Patrick's
number one is. Yeah, why don't we start with you for number one of your favorite publisher?
My number one for me, and this is... I ended up choosing a lot of mine because of, like, how much they, like, surprised me, essentially. Which I don't think is a fair metric, really, but, you know, that's what I went with.
I think it's a solid metric.
Yeah, so my number one is Dark Horse, actually.
Ooh!
Yeah, they were just, this was a publisher that
Dark Horse in the number one race.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, before Kat leaves. No, I think this is a comic, but they've always sort of been on my radar, but this year, with stuff like Invisible Kingdom, and others, I'm just forgetting, like, every single comic that they've published now. But
you're so excited, they're all gone now.
Right.
Yeah, but I think, like, they really kind of came out of nowhere for me personally this year. And just put out some really surprisingly solid material that, because, I don't know, Image is like, it's an Image book. I'm going to read it. It's going to be good. So, you know, but Dark Horse is really a dark horse, to use the pun again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Cool.
Yeah,
cool.
All right, well, Kat and I believe have the same number one then.
Oh yeah.
And so our number one and Patrick's number two is DC Comics. For me, this is summed up in two very simple words: Black Label.
Yeah, I was gonna say DC. Yeah. / DC Black Label.
Yeah, Black Label came out with a freaking blowgun and just murdered everything else.
They're like, oh, like, you see how the comics are normally done?
Yeah.
What's that flamethrower you got there, DC? Oh, don't worry about it.
Yeah, seriously. This year we had a...
They almost out-imaged Image.
Yeah, seriously. Because it was Superman Year One, Batman Last Night on Earth.
I know, that's so funny.
Wonder Woman,
Dead Earth number one. You had the Question. Like, we read so many of these books.
All the Harley
year.
Books.
Oh yeah.
I was honestly really shocked though, because I was worried that it was just going to be a bunch of Batman titles and like Batman, Joker, Harley Quinn, and they're like, oh no, we're just buttering your buns right now.
Oh yeah, Last Gods.
Yeah, that one, that comic itself shows me that they're like, we're trying something different. Here's this.
Yeah. I also got two more awards from DC though. Young Animal.
Oh, yeah. Seriously.
Because Young Animal has Far Sector. Is it Young Animal?
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's true. Well, we also have Heroes in Crisis, Doomsday Clock, Justice League. It's unreal, like, the amount of content that they really put out this year.
Yeah, like, good, solid content, too. Mm-hmm.
Oh, was it White Knight?
Yeah, Curse of the White Knight. Tales from the Dark Multiverse. Like, they just did a lot of really, really good stuff.
Yeah.
Well,
and
like,
the Batman Who Laughs... Cough, that was a joke.
It was a good book. It's just definitely, like, for me, too much.
I think the biggest thing right now is they're just kind of... I don't know. Well, he's the leader of the Dark Multiverse shit, though.
Yeah.
Sort of.
Yeah, they
Anyway, but not to... Yeah, but no...
I didn't mean to derail us that much.
Yeah. Okay. But... Yeah. No, I mean, when it came down to it, like... they're not necessarily like their ongoing series, but it was just like these short books that they threw out at me at DC Black Label, or the short little things that they threw out from, or the one shots they threw out, like Dark Multiverse, and they're like, we're just doing things and stuff. Is it working?
Yeah. Well, and I gotta shout out something that Patrick and I both read is Martian Manhunter. I mean, that was another DC book that just like Really, one of those books that came out maybe just like 1 second too early because it really should have been a Black Label book.
And like, yeah, I guess it did come out like, what, a month or two early before. Yeah, they're like, here's Black Label.
Because it's a full year release.
I bet when it comes out as a trade, they'll probably label it as a Black Label.
Yeah, because it's kind of out of continuity.
I don't care.
We'll talk about it later.
Honestly, yeah. Half the time when we talk about DC Black Label, they're like, it's for mature audiences. You know, the ones who can drink.
Yeah, right? Going for the top shelf shit.
Yeah, there with your, like, snifter of brandy or DC Black Label.
I'm reading about Superman.
Yeah, right. And your velvet, like, robe next to a fireplace.
Right?
Yeah. Punch him harder.
All right. Well, thank you to all the great comic book publishers of 2019. You did a great job. Yeah. With that, we will move on to our favorite single issue of 2019. This is a harder category, I will say that to begin with, because you are pulling things from your entire years of like 100 some odd comics, 1,000 comics that you read.
Yeah.
Anyway, I honestly did stick within the ones that, and it made this a lot easier, that were literally just one issue.
Yeah.
That's it. That's how I did it.
All right. Well, I have got my, my number three is House of X number 2, written by Jonathan Hickman. And I'm kicking myself in the head right now because I cannot remember the artist of House of X.
RB Silva's the other one, isn't it?
Yeah. Anyway, House of X number 2 was it was Pepe Larraz.
That's right.
I kicked myself for that one. also, bad note-taking, so yeah. But this was the Moira X reveal, so that broke my brain.
Oh, yeah.
This was the issue where we realized that Moira MacTaggert was not only an important character to the X-Men, but was probably the most important figure in all of the Marvel Universe.
Well, which is weird, because it kind of coincided with the realization in Doomsday Clock that Superman was...
Yep.
Yeah. I remember you were just like...
That might come up in later categories.
Fair enough.
Yeah. I remember you, like, yeah, when that happened, you were just all over the place.
I was.
Pulling out your hair. And
I was. I almost forgot about this one, too. And I was like, oh, my God, this was such a... I just shaved my head after that. But yeah, I just remember feeling the impact of this issue, and everything worked for me. And I was like, this is... definitely a story that I can get behind because I have no idea where it goes, you know? And that was really a nice, lively thing.
I totally forgot because I can't read, apparently. I had 4.
You have 4. So let's backtrack to a number 4
God
then,
damn it.
Kat.
Oh.
So my number 4, which is an honorable mention at this point, was Harley Quinn, Year of the Villain, written by Mark Russell and art by Mike Norton, because... I'm sorry. That thing was fucking hysterical.
It was so funny.
I was laughing while reading it.
Absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
So
good. Yeah. And I was like, you know, my feelings aren't even hurt right now. The like detail that they put in with her wearing like spoofs of costumes from other award shows. I'm sorry. That was.
Yeah.
I mean, alongside with the Harley Quinn animated series, I was like, dude, everybody's just whacking it out of the park right now.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I feel like people are like, Harley Quinn's so passe at this point, and there's a couple... cell phones. There's a couple authors who are just like... who are just like, wait, hold my pencil.
Yeah. Excuse me, hold my pen?
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Either that or they're like, hold my typewriter /keyboard.
Yeah.
All right, well, what's your number 3 then, Patrick?
My number 3 is actually similar to your honorable mention. It was the Year of the Villain, Riddler.
Ah, me too!
Yeah. Oh, really?
Is that
your
number 3?
Yeah,
nice. That's crazy.
That was another one where it was like, he's such an intelligent human being, and Mark Russell's like, yeah, he is.
He is. Like, stop shitting on the Riddler. He's a good villain. We just need to make him that way.
And then, what was it, King Tut?
Yeah, that was hilarious. Before we get into this, yes, written by Mark Russell. This one has art, though, by Scott Godlewski.
I think,
which is an amazing name
as
well. But, yeah, the whole thing was hilarious, and, like, just, like, this whole idea of, like, the classic spoof or like or
the 1960s yeah, like
theme yeah. Violins, you know, where everything has a riddle on it or like is Pharaoh themed somehow. Or,
like, yeah, his house was a his house had like one of the like Egyptian statues of yeah, made like that.
Giant, it is a giant sphinx, I'm pretty sure yeah. It was a house.
Man, Mark Russell is a really, really
I was just laughing. I just think about the behind one of two doors is either me or a tiger. Roar! Oh, shit.
Yeah. Damn it. Yeah. It's so, like, there's only two doors to beat Batman. Like,
yeah.
It's, they're so, like, overly contrived and, like, simply thwarted and, I don't know. It's great. Yeah. Mark Russell's attention to, like, because he has, like, great joke writing and then, like, gets super poignant, like, yeah. Out of nowhere for half a page and you're like, what is humanity?
Oh, yeah, no, exactly. Well, the other part of it is, too, is, like, what was it? In the New 52, Scott Snyder took the Riddler to like, where it looks like he's Mark Russell's trying to point him back into.
Yeah.
So, it was,
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a great issue. I enjoyed the shit out of it.
Absolutely.
Cool. Well, I guess that will move us to number two, then. Number two, favorite issue of 2019 was Tales from the Dark Multiverse, Batman Nightfall number one.
That was horribly gruesome.
This is written by Scott Snyder and Kyle Higgins with art by Javier Fernandez.
I rip your arm off and drink your venom blood.
Not only was this an absolute gorgeous dystopian cyberpunk future version of Batman, it was so unexpected. They did so many things in this particular issue where I was like, I didn't think you'd go there. It is an alternate reality take of when Azrael takes over Batman. Instead of giving up the mantle, he just kills him, ? Mm-hmm. And then it is they do a time skip, I think 30 years. And we see the future when we all hail Saint Batman. And he's basically the ruler of Gotham and not just its protector. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's crazy. It's gorgeous, too. Javier Fernandez does a combination of traditional inks and digital inks to match his inking style, like his paper ink or a traditional ink style. It's just awesome.
I think the other part of it is too, like these books will probably inspire people to read the older storylines, like something like this. Because I read that and I was like, well, now I kind of want to read it.
Right?
Know what actually happened?
I mean, that's only a good thing, right? And get people reading some of the older stuff. I was brought into comics like regularly during the Nightfall arc, so this had a special place in my heart. So.
Oh. Nice.
Yeah.
A little nostalgia there.
A really well-handled version of the character, so.
Nice.
Cool. Patrick?
Yeah, so for me, my number two was Dark Knight Returns, Golden Child.
Ooh!
Written by Frank Miller with art by Raphael Grandpa.
Ooh!
Oh, man, this, I was just in awe reading this book. Like, it just feels like
matched.
Yeah, like talking about like these super godlike beings, like the book itself feels like you're reading something that's like almost biblical.
Yeah.
It really doesn't seem like a comic book or a superhero story. This seems like Moses and God and Jesus or, you know, Buddha or Muhammad. I don't know, some like holy figures, and this is just like the holy scripture of these godlike beings.
I kind of like the fact that we know each other very well, and I did not have to make this an honorable mention because I knew you would put it in your top three. So I was able to have my cake and eat it too, so to speak, because I absolutely love this issue as well. For me, it was good to see an artist that worked so well with Frank Miller too, because Raphael Grandpa, like, kicked it up a notch. It had that Dark Knight Returns feel. However, it was definitely a tour de force for him with his normal style. Like his design sense was so incredible. His characters were so expressive and insane. Like, everything was just so big in this book. It was like godlike figures. So.
Yeah, and his, like, choice of perspective, too, in it is just really, it really kicks it up another notch, too. Like, I still, like, wake up in the middle of the night screaming because I just see John just floating there in the living room when he's a kid.
Right.
You know, just, like, terrifyingly just looking right at you. Like, stop. No, turn your head that way, please.
You're not the golden child. You're the blood-soaked child.
Yeah, seriously. I'm, like, terrified of you. I have no reason. No. I have no. I don't know why, but.
Yeah. That's cool.
Anyway.
Awesome.
Well, what about you, Kat?
So, my number two was Tales from the Dark Multiverse, Death of Superman.
Woo-hoo!
By Jeff Loveness, and then and art by Brad Walker. That one was... I'm not a fan of Lois Lane, and that was a story about Lois Lane that I enjoyed, and I don't know why, because it was not horrible in the sense it was bad, but horrible in the sense of, like, oh my god, what am I reading? Like, it's a Lois Lane who... kills Hope because Superman died, and instead of honoring her his memory, she just decides to take revenge on the world.
Yeah, it kind of comes to the realization that maybe Superman was too soft on a universe that he could have done more with.
Yeah, it was, I mean, honestly, I think, and spoiler alert on this one, the fact that near the end of it, that they still keep it to the fact that he's still alive.
Yeah.
And she does some things that I almost, like, pooed myself when I was reading it.
And Brad Walker does a great job on this book of, creating so much tension.
Oh, yeah, it was, I mean, just her getting those powers and then her wearing his torn-up cape and the, yeah, I mean, it was, I don't even know where to go because I was just so, it was a really, really dark story that I did not think that I would love as much as I did. Because I got it, and I read it, and I was like, holy shit. Imagine if this Lois Lane showed up in our universe.
Eradicator Lois is pretty sweet.
Right?
Pretty sweet. I love that book. That's a really, really, like... Yeah, once again, glad that you guys chose those so I can talk about them.
Having absolutely no bearing on that, I just want to say Eradicator Lois seems... Sounds amazing.
Yeah.
That's all.
I mean, Tales from the Dark Multiverse, people are like, well, DC is so dark. And they're like, all right, then.
Yeah, it's like, let's add some black coffee to the mix.
Yeah, they're like, okay, hold my black coffee. I'm going to go get, you know, coffee beans and grind them with my teeth.
Yeah. hold my severed head.
Yeah. And chew, we're going to take the severed head and we're going to put coffee beans in the severed head and we're going to crunch them down with the severed head and then we're going to make the coffee.
We're gonna boil the blood.
Yeah, it's blood soaked coffee.
God damn it.
Well, we went to a dark place. So I'm not gonna lift us out of that dark place with my number one single issue of the year. My favorite single issue of 2019 was Doomsday Clock number 10. That was the Dr. Manhattan. Figures out that Superman is the center of the metaverse, and we became part of the story, and my brain blew up a little bit, and I put the book down and turned to my wife and said, I just read the single best comic book that I've maybe read in 5 years.
Oh.
Just gonna take a deep breath really quick.
Yeah.
He matters, suck it.
Exactly. Superman matters, and matters in a big, bad way.
He's also, the Moira of DC, suck it.
Also, I didn't highlight the creators, but this is written by Jeff Johns with art by Gary Frank.
I love Gary Frank.
I did not think that I would get so much meaning from a book that is from the perspective of Dr. Manhattan, because I am not that intelligent, but I was able to read it and like get all of that and live within his headspace, and it was just... a wonderfully weird detective story from a person who knows everything.
That was like, really weird. His, like, seeing how he actually sees the universe is... I don't know how the fuck he handles anything.
Yeah.
Even being as a godlike being. Because apparently he just, like, drifts in and out of times the whole time. And I'm like, oh my god, what?
Yeah. The way Geoff Johns captures Dr. Manhattan's Manhattaniness is really, really, really well done.
Well, you're just standing over here and like, oh, I am understanding why he's so spacey.
Yeah, I know, right? Because he is not in space. He is in time.
Awesome book.
Yeah, great. Great, 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 great.
Patrick, your favorite issue?
This one's probably going to be no shock to anybody. But my number one was Squirrel Girl number 50.
Hey!
Hey, yeah. Yeah. And, that I forced y'all to read against your wills.
Enjoy it.
But yeah, this was, I've always been a big Squirrel Girl fan. It was one of the first comics I ever read. And, you know, this was just, for me, it was a roller coaster of emotions. I cried and I laughed. And I literally laughed so hard at one point I had to put the book down because it was probably a good, like, 2 to 3 minutes straight that I was just cracking up, just sitting, like, by myself in my basement, just reading a comic and just, like,
your roommates are like, shut up, Patrick, it's 1 in the morning!
No, I actually had to stop reading Squirrel Girl comics too late at night because, like, yeah, previous roommates got pissed at me. But
that's awesome.
Yes. So that is amazing. Tour de Force, Ryan North, Derek Charm. Love to see what both of y'all go on and do next. So, anywho, Kat?
If Nat remembers, this probably won't be a shock, but Man and Superman, the 100-page spectacular number one by Marv Wolf and Claudio Castellini.
Nice.
That was one of the best Superman stories I have ever read, and it is probably going to go down in history as one of my favorite Superman stories. It was... I forgot about it this year until I was flipping through.
Yeah.
Just the comics that came out for this year, and I was like, that came out? I forgot about you! You were a gem!
That's an inspired choice.
Nice. I mean, it's not necessarily shocking, but, you know, at the same time, it was a solid Superman story, and I just remember when I read it, when I got it, and I read it, and I never necessarily read all the pieces on a comic book, but I read every single piece in that one. Even the note at the beginning that he wrote, and I was like, he's like, yeah, I wrote this story like 10 years ago, and I was like, wait, what? No, I think it was almost closer to 20, because he did it in 2005.
Yep.
So it was like 15 years ago. I was like, holy shit, what? You telling me what?
It's amazing what you can do with a timeless character when you actually take care of the character and pay attention to what you're doing.
I mean, I think the best part to that entire thing was him wearing a pantyhose over his head.
Should I be anonymous?
Yeah. But that was definitely my favorite single issue of the entire year. So
awesome.
All right. Well, cool. Cool. What do we have next then?
Next we have favorite movie of 2019. I have 4. Kat has 4.
I have 4 as well.
All right. Oh, well, wow. I'll just go ahead. I will start then the rotation here with my number 4 favorite movie of 2019 was Jojo Rabbit. This is Taika Waititi's awesome.
I didn't think we would ever talk about this.
Satirical.
Oh my god.
Really, really dark yet really funny take on the Nazis at the end of World War II.
In reality, something totally up my alley, but I don't know if I could bring myself to watch it.
It's a wonderful movie. I really voted with my heart more than anything else in this category, where there's nothing on this list that didn't make me cry when I watched it the first time. That, for me, was the key element, and Jojo Rabbit is definitely on that list.
Yeah, I haven't gotten around to seeing it yet, but it's definitely on my list.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil too much about it. Just know that it's not the story you expect it to be, and it covers some very, very dark pieces of the story, but in traditional Taika way that will make you laugh as you do it.
Yeah, I'm pretty solidly sure that a movie about Hitler is not necessarily going to be anything but dark.
It's about the Hitler youth more than it's actually about Hitler.
Yeah, which, that makes it
you could make it even darker. Like, let's take Hitler and put him on kids. Yeah. All
right. Patrick, what's your number 4 then?
My number 4, and once again, my metric was like stuff that surprised me the most.
Okay.
So this had to make it on there just because I didn't know I needed Dora and the Lost City. But I absolutely can't imagine myself being without it now.
That's hilarious.
This was directed by James Bauman, starring Isabella O'Connor as Dora and Michael Pena and Danny Trejo as Boots. This movie, I went into it with absolutely no expectations, and I came out and started just yelling at everybody to go see it. Like, everybody I know, I was like, you need to see this movie. Everybody needs to see this movie. Hilarious. Like, nonstop hilarious. Semi-poignant even at points about, coming-of-age stories. I was actually kind of surprised at how I was like, yeah, you know, definitely.
That's awesome.
But, yes, had to make it an honorable mention.
I was almost going to say Up Up just to joke.
That would be hilarious. My number one movie of the year.
All right, Kat, what is your number four then?
My number four is going to be Shazam, because I actually thoroughly enjoyed that movie.
Nice.
We went and saw it in that, and I was like, you know, I thought I was going to be upset with this movie, but I wasn't. And in reality, too, when I was, like, sitting down and thinking about it, I did not see very many movies this year either. So,
yeah.
I also have a smaller pool of things.
I unfortunately did not either.
I was, like, thinking about it, and there's just a span of 6 months where I just didn't even go to the movies, period. No. But Shazam, when me and my wife went to see it, we had a good time. We were laughing the majority of that damn movie, and I can't think of the actor's name, but he did a great job of playing a fucking giant-ass man-child.
Oh, Zach Braff, right?
Yeah.
I think that's right. No. Who plays?
Oh.
Zachary Levi.
That's what I was like. It was someone. I was like, I feel like there's an... I know he has an L in his name somewhere.
Yeah. Losing my nerd cred here today.
That's all right.
All right, well, then I guess number three.
All right, my number three is Klaus, the Netflix original Christmas film, directed by Sergio Pablos from SPA Animation Studios, his own studio. I did not expect the animation successor to Into the Spider-Verse was going to be a streaming platform Christmas release.
Huh?
This is a beautifully rendered 2D animated film that uses a new lighting technique so they can apply 3D lighting onto the 2D surface and make it appear like it's almost coming at you like a 3D film.
Okay, that was what was confusing me.
Yeah, it looks gorgeous. It's absolutely just, it's such an awe to pause and just stare at what they were able to do. They used slapsticky humor in a really great way, and they made me cry multiple times.
Aww.
I actually went back and rewatched a scene, just this particular scene from the movie, and cried again in the rewatch. So,
they're like, oh, is this your heart?
Yeah.
I'm gonna borrow this. No, wait, come back. Is it hurts
off it? Beautiful, beautiful filmmaking, beautiful animation. Support 2D animation. Go watch this film.
Nice. Nice, nice. So, number three for me was Lego Movie 2, the second part. Yes.
All right, I have to ask this. Are all your movies going to be, like, in the PG range, or are we going to take it?
No, his number one is totally hard R.
Yeah.
I just had to ask, because we went from Dora the Explorer to the Lego Movie,
but,
so I had to ask.
No, up until number one, actually, yes. Really, PG to PG.
That's awesome. He's like, all right, we're in the adult zone.
What? Man, I like. I'm sorry.
No, I'm not making fun of you. I just think it's funny.
But with your heart, right? That's what
you mean. Yeah. I was a huge fan of the original one, so this kind of wasn't a surprise that I loved this movie as much as I did. And Chris Pratt also playing
Chris
the
Pratt.
Villain in it, too, just... that just made the whole movie so much better.
Well, it got better.
I'm a space pirate velociraptor trainer.
Chris Pratt, yeah. Pratt playing Chris Pratt.
I don't get it. Yeah.
The existential idea of, like, the primary villainess, too, who was, like... appeared in whatever form she felt like you would be comfortable for people to be in. So she was like a Duplo creation octopus thing or a horse or like...
Which made it just so much more unnerving. Like, of course this person's the bad person.
Right.
Because they're so... And then when she sings the song about how she's not evil or whatever, and you're like, okay.
This hurts!
Yeah. Did you not hear my song? I was saying I wasn't evil. Oh my gosh. That movie was great. And then... Maya Rudolph coming in as the mom in the end for Our Momageddon. That was, oh my gosh. Everything about this movie was just, mwah.
It made me feel really bad about losing toys.
I know, right?
Really bad about losing toys. I feel bad for our listeners, too, because if this would have come out before Thanksgiving, they could have gotten the Blu-ray edition of this movie for $4. And I sure shit did, because I enjoyed this movie immensely.
Yeah.
It's my third favorite of the Lego films, but that still puts them in really high praise.
Yeah, but at the same time, you have Lego Batman.
Yes, exactly. Like Lego Batman is one of the most amazing movies ever.
Yeah, so.
Black. Anyway. God.
Geez. And he's back, and he looks like Mad Max in Lego movie, the second part.
Yeah, right? That was, oh my gosh, that was amazing.
Tire shoulder patch.
Yeah. Sewer mutant babies.
Oh,
all right, Kat, what do you have for us?
Oh, God. All right, my number three was Reign of the Superman.
Oh, we're still on three of this, right? Mm-hmm. Reign of the Superman was this year? That movie was awesome.
Came out the very beginning of the year, and I remember it specifically because I went to the movie theater, and I woke up early on a Sunday so I could see The Death of Superman and then watch The Reign of Superman after that at a special thing at the movie theater.
Awesome.
And that movie made my heart hurt. Just like Death of Superman did. But, I mean, it's a really solid story, and it's another one where I think I'll probably go and read the original one as well, but The Reign of the Superman was just, it was good. It was great. I love DC animated films.
That's awesome.
So much.
Nice.
Cool.
Nice.
All right. Well, my number two is not going to be controversial at all in this tumultuous environment of fandom. That would be Star Wars Episode IX, The Rise of Skywalker. Ooh. All right. We'll talk about it later.
Nice. All right. Well, my number two, staying in the realm of stuff that that I try to avoid going to the theaters for, because I don't want to be ran out of town being in... I don't think it actually was in theaters, though. But Steven Universe, the movie!
Oh!
Yes.
Don't spoil
anything. I'm going to spoil the whole thing. directed by Rebecca Sugar and starring all the cast, so...
Yeah.
But, yeah, I actually just rewatched it again a few nights ago to remind myself how amazing it is. And it's awesome. The one thing I will spoil for you is it's a musical. It's legit. The whole thing is a musical with like reprisals and like
is that
themes.
Hulu?
It Hulu is Plus. If you have Hulu Plus. So yeah.
I do not have Hulu Plus. Sorry.
Yeah.
I've always been watching Steven Universe lately. So
yeah.
She's all salty right now.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's great. It's fantastic and like. Things wrapped up pretty well at the end of season 5, so I was like, how are they going to have conflict in this now that, you know, if you're caught up, pretty much everything sort of ended for the first 5 season arc. But they do a really good job, too. It's classic Steven Universe, too. Everything is not as cut and dry as you can make it seem. People are complex, and you have to approach problems from a complex, in a complex way to solve them. You know, you can't just hit things harder, even though he's, like, one of the most powerful people in the universe now, I guess.
That's cool.
So, really good. Really good.
And I
love musicals, too. So
the way they do their musical stuff is
the
best.
But, I mean, yeah, no, the movie has a theme, and it, like, brings it back in different, like, ways. It's really, really well done.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, well, my turn, and I'm probably going to be laughed at a little bit, but at the same time, if you haven't seen it, you won't understand why I feel the way I do. My number two was Frozen 2. I have never felt more personally attacked by a movie. Like, and by a fucking snowman at that. There's a song that he sings called When I Get Older.
Yeah.
Fuck off, he's a dick. But that was actually, I honestly think that I enjoyed that movie more than I enjoyed the first one.
Interesting. This is where we superimpose like a clip of you talking like when we first discussed the first trailer.
Yeah. And I was like, I don't want it. And I was like,
go away, get out of here. I hate you.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I was not expecting where they were going to go with this movie, and the first Frozen movie didn't make me cry, but I cried like a tiny bitch in this one. I was like a small child in that theater.
Oh.
And I saw it with Andy, and she was also next to me crying. And there's like a song in that movie that is the most, one of the most heartbreaking songs I have ever heard come from a Disney movie.
That's saying a lot, actually.
Yeah, I've been trying to take Nat to see it just so I can have someone to be like, "Do you see and understand why I feel this way? Do you see this? This is what's happening."
I do want to see it too. Yeah, when's it going to be on Disney Plus?
God, probably not for months.
Probably not.
Well, no. Oh, well.
But no, it's like, it's honestly, if you can go to the Dollar Theater and see it, I would honestly suggest it.
I always forget about the Dollar Theater.
I do too, but it's actually a very solid film. I did not think I was going to enjoy it as much as I did.
Fair. Well, that's fair.
Cool. Also, her new song that she sings, Into the Unknown, is way better than Let It Go.
Yeah, and it's not everywhere, so.
That's
also
true.
Fair enough.
They actually make fun of her Let It Go thing too in that movie. It's funny.
Nice. All right, well, I will start with number one for me was Avengers Endgame. To no surprise, I saw this movie twice in theaters, cried a lot. It's big fan servicey, big budget, crazy reprisal and ending of 10 years of a journey, and it worked for me.
It was an amazing movie. The second time I watched it, I started crying in the opening scene, and I was just like, I gotta pause this and come back later. Yeah. I'm not emotionally, if I'm already crying, I'm not gonna be ready for, you know, other stuff.
You're like, I am not emotionally prepared for this.
The moment that gets me every time is when Ant-Man sees his daughter.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's something about that. Like, you're so big.
Oh gosh. There are a surprising amount of like truly heartfelt moments in such a big, epic, sweeping movie.
Cool. Well, Patrick, you're number one?
Well, as you correctly guessed, Matt, and to no one's surprise, number one for me was Joker.
I was just saying, and he's like, I'm a kid, we're going to Joker. Yeah,
exactly. PG.
Here we are in the future, Steven Universe future.
Death and blood everywhere.
Yeah. Yep. Cool. This movie was amazing. I don't really have much more to say about it that we didn't cover in our Joker movie review episode.
Yeah. It didn't make my top because I don't want to revisit it.
It's like one of those movies for me. It's like technical, like near perfection, but I'm good.
We went to dark places I do not want to return to right now.
Yeah, it's definitely like a Darren Aronofsky movie.
Yep.
Like that was an amazing film and a masterpiece, and I won't watch that again for 20 years.
my wife was like, we left the theater, she's like, are you okay? I was like, I was uncomfortable. Yeah. Not in, like, I hate the movie, just uncomfortable because this is uncomfortable.
Yeah.
All right. Cool. Okay, you ready to take us home?
I am ready to take us home. Star Wars Rise of Skywalker.
Whoa!
I can't say it. I mean, that was probably the one movie of this year that, besides Frozen 2, where the only reason I checked my watch once, and the only reason I did was because I was like, how long have I been in here? This has been great. Well, how long have I been in here? Yeah. I mean, the best part to that is at least the trailers that I watched, it didn't tell me anything.
No.
Told you absolutely nothing.
You knew it was going to be the end of the Skywalker saga, but you didn't know how they'd get there.
Oh my god.
I'm
fine. Is everyone okay?
I have not felt as emotional in so many different ways as I did during this film.
I can agree with that.
I literally had moments where I threw my arms up in anger. I cried incessantly at certain moments. Like, I could not physically take it. I screamed, oh shit, out loud in a movie theater because I wasn't expecting them to do things.
I had a what the fuck, because we talked about it previously. Yeah. I had a what the fuck when I saw that.
It is a sprawling mythic. It is not, paints with a big broad brush, and it takes you there with actors who know what they're doing.
And I will flat out say I did not expect, because I can say that the last movie I did not really care for, and with this I was surprised. Because even Force Awakens, I was like, all right. And the next one, I was like, okay, I don't like this. And then this one, I was like, wow, they actually, okay, all right.
Yeah.
I was like, you are now competing with Revenge of the Sith for one of my favorite movies. I have to go see it again to finalize things.
Saw it twice at 8:30 in the morning, and I don't regret either one of those showtimes.
It's completely fair, because I had to see it at 10:50 at night in order to get seats.
Yep.
That, you know, I wasn't, like, in the front row, just head straight up trying to watch a damn movie. I'm not paying $14 to do that shit.
Seriously. Cool. All right. Next. Well, we are to our final category of this episode. We're going to, unfortunately, I'm going to have to rush through some things, but that's okay. Our favorite TV show or streaming show, I'm going to say I have six.
You have five? I got five.
Okay. Kat, you're three?
Yeah.
Okay. So I will start with my number six. My number six is Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance. World building, just beautiful. I'm so happy to see Muppets back on screen, and I never felt so invested in a bunch of characters where I was like, I know where this journey is supposed to go, but I have no idea how you're going to get there.
Yeah, it was incredible. I was sad that it didn't make my list, but this is a hard one for
this is a hard category.
This year has a lot of really good television / streaming.
It does. All right, number five for me was Stranger Things Season 3. I had previously called this a perfect season of television. It's pretty damn close. Revisiting it.
There's only one 3.5-minute sequence that doesn't make it a perfect season for me, which is the song they sing.
Oh, I love the never ending song.
Oh my god.
It's so good.
Just that they did the whole thing, I was kind of like, alright, we get it. I appreciate the commitment on the one hand.
Right.
But it should just like cut it off.
I think this season needs to be studied by anybody who wants to do the, we have three or four disparaging stories and we're going to pull them together and then we're going to let characters break apart again. It was handled so well. I was invested in every single one of the storylines, so I never was like, oh, what's happening over here? It was more like, oh crap, we got back to this storyline now too. Yeah. Holy shit, I forgot about this.
I'm trying not to like throw up while I'm watching TV.
Yeah, lots of homages to some serious horror movie stuff. You have a number five as well, right?
I have a number, my number five is Daybreakers. This is a Netflix original series based off of a comic book.
Is it a vampire story?
No. This is there was that movie a while ago called Daybreakers, I think. But no, this is a post-apocalyptic movie that's simultaneously meta-textual, hilarious, and gory AF.
Interesting.
It's basically if the apocalypse happened and all of the cliques in the high school turned into Mad Max style gangs.
Okay, that sounds amazing.
And
oh my god.
It's absolutely amazing. I don't know if they're going to do a second season or not, but the first season, it's
I
want
to know what the cheerleaders are. I want to know what they are.
The Cheermazons.
Oh my god!
Yes, they only have it's hilarious, and it's told through it's told through flashbacks to before the apocalypse and then after, and all the parallels of all the characters throughout it, and the main character is sort of the no click guy or whatever running around, and it's hilarious and it's super meta, and basically the camera is like a character that he talks to throughout, and I can't dote this enough. You get great things like American Ninja Idol, where like you have to sing a song good enough or they drop you into a pit of zombies.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So, yep. Great show. Highly suggest it.
Awesome. All right. Well, my number four is Witcher. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Up on this one for Kat.
Yeah, not right. Shocking.
Patrick, your number four?
My number four was Young Justice Season 3.
Ooh, didn't make my list.
Whoa. There was a lot of stuff. But yeah, it was great. Young Justice is awesome, and it was even more awesome this season, I feel, than the first two seasons are god-tier TV. And
more new gods.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Cool. Anyway, well, I think we're down to number threes, right?
We're the number threes. All right, yay. I'll start with my number three, The Dragon Prince. Seasons 2 and 3 both released this year. 3 literally freaking ended where I thought the series was going to end, and that the promise of the future is insane to me. Like, I have no idea where this show goes now, and that is incredible. It's the anti-Game of Thrones. It had the, like, massive battle ending that I wish we would have seen in that show. It's so beautiful, too. It's great use of color, great distinct tribes. The different groupings are all fantastic. Go watch Dragon Prince, man.
Support, yeah, I have support Dragon good Prince at season at number 3 as well.
Oh, no joke!
Yeah. So, yeah, great, amazing. The world building is just epic in this, especially season 3. Like, yeah. I didn't even know that they could get, whatever, continues to get awesome. And I was there with you, too. I was like, isn't this where the show's supposed to end?
Right?
How do you have 4 more seasons of this?
It's going to be interesting.
Yep. Anywho, what about you, Kat?
Patrick will have thought of this with me. I picked Big Mouth season 3.
Yes! That is awesome.
The best episode I've ever seen, I think, in like a comedy show is the Florida episode.
Dude.
It's literally the opening when they pulled into Florida was a baby in a bikini shooting off 2 guns, and it was the funniest shit. That entire song, then they have a song in it. Oh my god, no, that was great.
The episode that gets me is the, but I think for me the best Big Mouth one was the season finale. It's superheroes. How can you not love everybody being superheroes?
Yay. That was ridiculous.
Yeah, it's a crazy show.
That's a show that's difficult for me to watch. I tried watching the first episode and I'm like, woof, I don't know if I'm old enough for this yet.
Yeah.
season two made me a lot more uncomfortable with certain other things, but season 3 kinda went back to, it's like, grown up's weird.
Yeah.
Growing up is weird.
Yeah.
Well, on that, growing up is weird, and sometimes you talk more than you think you do, so we're going to just go ahead and tease that our number 2s and number 1s for favorite TV show streaming or on TV, that was a weird mouthful, will be on our next episode. We're going to just continue right where we left off here.
Mm-hmm.
So we will...
So tune into End of the Year Review Part 2. Yay!
Deuces.
All right, well, with that, I guess we'll say bye now, then. Huh?
Bye for now!